Good morning, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study coming to you live from St. Francisville, Louisiana. Thank you so very much for joining us today. We are still in our study. We're on a quest regarding the historicity of Moses. Honest to Moses. This is class number 16. At the end of today's class, this is how I keep you. I'm going to give an announcement of something that's coming next. And so you have to stick around or go find something to do and come back in about an hour and 10 minutes. And you'll hear about something that I'm excited about. Because honestly, tracking down the historical Moses or this quest for the historical Moses is really my life's work, and I think many of you would raise your hand and sign up for the same life's work. And so just about anything that I teach is probably going to be focused in some way on this subject material. So in effect, I could be doing the Honest to Moses series for, 100 years. So anyway, we're going to talk about that at the end of the class, but I wanted to go through. I've got some material that I want to cover today that I think is important in regards to the past 15 or so classes. I believe, as I've explained over the last couple of classes at least, that Moses introduced the children of Israel to Jehovah. And by that I mean the name Jehovah. It's Moses who introduces the children of Israel to that name, and also, in somewhat the same statement from another angle, I could also say that it's through the Moses story that the entire world then and now has come to know the name Jehovah as the God of the children of Israel. Now, if we take the Pentateuch for what it says, God, and I'm using air quotes because that is an English word that typically represents one of at least three Hebrew words, but God, deity in a generic sense, when the Pentateuch talks about God, the God that we know of the Bible was not known by the name Jehovah prior to the time of Moses. We covered this fairly extensively last week by taking a careful look at the passages, relevant passages in the book of Exodus, Shemot, Exodus 3, Exodus 6. So God was not known, according to these accounts, prior to the time of Moses, as Jehovah or Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Yehovah, but rather as El Shaddai. And we talked last week about the meaning of Shaddai. And as you know, as we covered, there are quite a few options out there in terms of what the scholars believe is the etymology of both El and Shaddai, actually. But we covered that last week in the class that I titled God's First Name. Now, over the past week, having followed that trail, I gave a lot of thought to what I would do this week. So I spent a lot of time over the past 7 days looking and considering various alternative paths for the class today. What would I speak on? I carefully studied the ancient names for God according to the biblical text and ancient Near Eastern text. You know, I really studied into the Semitic words that we know from the Hebrew as El or Eloah, Elohim, all of these words, and really got into the Semitic background on those. And what do we know from archaeology and historical documents? And there is an extensive amount of material out there to go through. So if you want to do an incredible deep dive into the names and the titles or designations for the Semitic deities, God's name or God's titles in the Levant, in the ancient Near East, just simply do a search on the origins of El or Eloah, Elohim. But I've decided today to take this in a slightly different direction than I thought I was going to go last week. And that wasn't because I had a dream or a vision. It was because my study took me in a slightly different direction. And what I'd like to focus on today is the name of Moses' God. And maybe it could be better stated, or perhaps better stated, if I say it, that I want to take this in the direction to look at the name of the deity who revealed himself to Moses. We're talking about the time of Moses at a place defined as Horeb or Har HaElohim, the mountain of Elohim. Because regardless of what the deity was known by or as prior to the meeting at the bush, you know, when I talk about the meeting at the bush, I'm referring to Exodus chapter 3. Prior to that meeting, whatever God was known as to his chosen people prior to that meeting at the bush, from this point forward, from Exodus 3 forward in the biblical narrative, this deity would be known and is known by the Tetragrammaton, by the four letters, Yod-Heh, Vav-Heh. As Exodus 3 puts it, "This," he said to Moses, "is my name Leolam," typically translated forever. "This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations." So we have a mark in time. We have a line literally in the sand of Horeb, where the deity tells Moses, basically, from this point forward, prior to this point, I wasn't known by the name Yod-Heh Vav-Heh, but from henceforth, this is my memorial unto all generations. And you see how I do that. I grew up on the King James, so I'm translating the root word zakar as memorial. This is my memorial. It's the name whereby I will be remembered unto all generations. Literally in the Hebrew, Lador Dor, from a generation of a generation. According to the biblical text, the revelation of this name does not change the speaker. Okay, let me make sure I communicate that clearly. When this deity says, "Ehye asher ehye," I will be that I will be, tell them, "Ehye sent me to you. My name is Jehovah." From that point forward, that God is known by that name. But we get clear indication, without any ambiguity, that that same speaker who declares himself, "I will be whatever I will be," the same one who says my name, Shem, my name is Yod-Heh Vav-Heh, is the same God who spoke prior and identified himself or was referred to by others as El, Eloah, Elohim. And when I say El, this God who was referred to by these terms, El has a lot of descriptors attached to it. You have in the biblical text, El Olam, El Barit, the God of eternity or the God of ages, the God of covenant, El Shaddai, El Elyon, the highest El he's known. Well, what does that imply? Does that imply that there are Els? I'm using sort of a Hebrew-English mix with a plural S. Are there Els that are lower than El Elyon? I mean, these questions come up as we study this. This particular deity calls and is called El Elohei Israel. El, the Elohei of Israel. What does all this mean? What does the term El mean? All of these questions are things that I looked into this week, but I elected to go for this class with a focus on after the bush. After the bush, the name whereby God becomes known throughout the rest of biblical history. This name becomes such an important part of who this deity is, or this this way of describing this God, because what does name really mean? But this description, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, is so much a part of who this deity is that later scribes would go back in and update the text to reflect. Like it would talk about an El Shaddai, in the context it would be El Shaddai talking with the patriarchs, but the scribe or the narrator or the final redactor would put into the text, and the Lord, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, appeared unto Avram and said, or unto Abraham as the case may be, and said, Ani El Shaddai. Well, which is it? Is it Jehovah appearing or is it El Shaddai? Because it says El Shaddai, I am El Shaddai. Well, the point is that the original story is that this deity appeared unto Moses or unto Abraham or whoever the case might be. In this story, it's Abraham. And he says, Ani El Shaddai. And then the later redactor would go in and say, yeah, that was Jehovah speaking. And I believe it was. So my point is that regardless of how this deity is addressed or referred to, the biblical text wants us to understand there's no change in speaker. He simply now is known by a different name. In fact, what we have is you have the term Elohim, which is the most common way of describing deity in the Bible, apart from Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, apart from the divine name, as we call it. And it appears over and over in the text. But we get clearly in the biblical text this phrase that occurs time and again. Yehovah hu ha-Elohim. Yehovah, he is the Elohim. So that somebody doesn't say, well, you know, the Elohim, when it talks about Elohim, that's a different God. And by the way, a lot of Semitic scholars proposed that this different usages of different names indicate different deities as they were understood by the children of Israel or these other ancient people. I don't believe that. I believe that there is one Elohim, one El, who identifies himself in the time of Moses as Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So I want to begin once again in Exodus chapter 6, verse 3, but I'm looking at something a little bit different today, and this is what caught my eye this week as I studied. Exodus chapter 6, verse 3. Not that it was just put into my Bible, but something made me focus on this particular part of Exodus. Exodus 6, 3. Actually, let's start in 6:2. God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as El Shaddai, but I did not make myself known to them by my name Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. All right. Va'era el Avraham, el Yitzhak, ve'el Yaakov, ba'el Shaddai, ve'ushmi Yehovah lo nodati lachim. The last part of that says, but by my name Yehovah, no, I was known to them. Or we would straighten that out syntactically in English and say, but by my name, Jehovah, I wasn't known to them. Now, that's pretty straightforward. Now, you would be surprised. Maybe you wouldn't, but I wasn't. But you might be surprised at how many ways people seek to interpret those very clearly stated words. By my name, Jehovah, I was not known to them. So this is not suggesting that the one speaking in Exodus chapter 6 was not known to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It is not saying, he doesn't say, I was not known to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. You follow? What he says is, I wasn't known by the name Jehovah. So he's saying, oh yeah, they knew me and knew me well. We have plenty of text which indicate this. There's no question about it. In fact, he is called, Abraham is called the friend or the beloved of God, of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. We have several passages that say that. Isaiah 41:8, 2 Chronicles chapter 20 and verse 7. Even the New Testament book of James talks about Abraham as the friend of God. Abraham knew God, and it was because of his relationship with the deity which called him out of Ur of the Chaldees and his faithfulness to the words that he received and the charge that he received from that deity that everything else in the biblical text follows. But he did not know the deity that spoke to him as Jehovah. And so Israel was introduced to the El of the Fathers by a memorial name, to use a little bit of King James there, that was not known prior to the time of Moses. He even adds, Moses, even following this encounter at the bush and his subsequent journeys and so forth, when he gets back and the Exodus, as we say, is fully underway, he even uses an element of this newly revealed name to change the name of his assistant from Hoshea to Yehoshua, Numbers chapter 13, verse 8, Numbers chapter 13, verse 16. We covered this in a previous class. But Moses is the first. So once he learns this name, which no one else knew prior to this, and I've covered that part, my reasoning for saying it that boldly in the previous classes, he then takes the name that he has learned and he adds a theophoric element to the name Hoshea, which is a portion of the divine name Yehovah, to Joshua's name, to Hoshea's name, making it Yehoshua. And by the way, this is the only example in the Pentateuch, in the five books, of a theophoric element containing the name Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and it's in the time of Moses. So what does that tell us? It tells us that the Bible is right, that when Exodus chapter 6, verse 2 and 3 tells us the name wasn't known prior, that's supported by a study of names of people and places. Because you might say, no, I think it's known before that. Well, if it was known, we would suspect or we would probably find, no doubt we would find, evidence of that name in place names and people names. But this is the only such name that employs an element of the Tetragrammaton in all of the Pentateuch. Previous people and places mentioned prior to Exodus chapter 6, verse 2 and 3, there are names of people and places with theophoric elements in it. You know, a portion of the divine name or title. So what you have is you have like Israel. That's a pretty big name in the Pentateuch, right? And in the Hebrew Bible. Israel's pretty important. But this person is named Israel, with El being the theophoric element. It's not Israhova or anything like that, combining a portion of the divine tetragrammaton, but it is the way God was known at that time, Israel. What about Ishmael? Ish, God hears, Ishmael. What about places such as Beit El? We have Beit El is very much a part of the patriarchal narratives, and it goes into the rest of the Hebrew Bible as well. But the God of that place is called El, El Beit El. The El of Beit El, the El of the house of El. No mention of the divine name in the name. And then we have places, remember when Jacob wrestles with this divine being in Genesis chapter, you know, the narrative of the return of Jacob beginning in chapter 31 and following, where he wrestles, chapter 32, chapter 33, where he wrestles with this divine being, and he names the place Peniel, you know, because he's associating the place with El. So elements of the name are used, but it's the name whereby this deity is known at the time. Prior to Moses, no one knew the name Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. But for the age, for the Olam in which Moses lived, a new name was necessary. A new name was revealed. A new name was made known. In fact, as it turns out, making known of this name, of this way of defining the one true deity, is a key to the entire Moses story, particularly as it's recorded in the Bible's book of Exodus. Shemot. Exodus, Shemot means names. So yes, Exodus does tell the story of the departure from Egypt. By the way, the English Exodus comes from the Greek exodos, which means the departure. And it is the story of the children of Israel departing from Egypt on their way to the promised land. But it also, the Hebrew name of the book is Shemot, which means names. And very important names are conveyed. Remember, it begins, these are the names of the children of Israel, and so forth. And then we have in Exodus 3 and Exodus 6, the revelation of God's name. So Exodus, while it concerns the departure of the children of Israel from Egypt, it also focuses on names. Now, one of the things that I want to make clear and that I want to highlight today is the fact that the Exodus, the departure of the children of Israel from Egypt, is the event that made God's name, newly revealed, known. And it is the event of the Exodus that made Jehovah a household name, if you will. Before the Exodus, before the events of leaving Egypt, did the world really know anything about this God, like on a big scale? It's this event that we still talk about today. Nothing in the history of humanity can compare with this story to which the name Jehovah is attached. Deuteronomy 4 puts it great. In fact, he calls it this great thing, the Exodus and the meeting at Sinai, the miracles and so forth. Ask all the way back to the beginning of time. Has anything like this ever happened? And the answer is no. And by the way, when that was written, the answer was no. And if I read it today, the answer is still no. Nothing like this has ever happened. And it is that event that from the prior to the Exodus, the call, Shalakit Ami, from let my people go that they may serve me until they miraculously take control of the Holy Land, that period of time is the greatest event, a watershed event in human history. It's never before, nothing like it's ever happened up to this point. Okay, now, after what I want to do today is talk about how this event, the biblical writers recognize that this event is the way that God made a name for himself. And years ago, I taught a class similar to this, but I found some things that I wanted to present to you today. So after Moses learns the name and he returns to Egypt, look with me at Exodus 5. Exodus 5 and verse 1. Afterward, again, today I'm reading from the JPS. I always add to that qualifying statement, I'm reading from the JPS. I don't particularly like the translation so much, but when I need the Hebrew, I can go to the Hebrew. Afterward, verse 1, Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, "Thus says Jehovah, the God of Israel, let my people go that they may celebrate a festival to me in the wilderness." But Pharaoh said, "Who is Jehovah that I should heed him and let Israel go? I do not know Jehovah, nor will I let Israel go." So Pharaoh is basically saying, no, don't know him, never heard of him. Now, if that name were known prior, you would think that Pharaoh would have heard of this name. You know, you might say, I don't know, the Pharaoh, he's not really mixing with the people. Certainly, some of his cabinet would have said, sir, that's the name of the Hebrew God? Oh, you know, because all political leaders have that person who kind of tries to bail them out when they don't know something. So in this case, he says, don't know Jehovah, never heard of Jehovah, and I'm not going to let Israel go. And Moses explains that he ought to, because here's the truth of the matter. By the end of this story, this saga, by the end of this, he's going to know Jehovah. He'll know Jehovah very well, and we're going to know this God. Now, what confuses matters is that this name is later added back into text prior to Exodus 6. It would make more sense in many ways had scribes not inserted those names where they weren't originally at. But anyway, so Moses complains later. I want you to look at Exodus 5:23. So he tells Pharaoh, let us go, and Pharaoh says, I don't know God, I don't know Jehovah, I'm not going to let you go. Moses then goes back to God in chapter 5. In verse 23, he tells God to Jehovah, ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, you know, the one you told me in Exodus 3 and Exodus 6, he has dealt worse with the people, and still you have not delivered your people. Interesting. He said, I took this name and spoke in the name, and we're still not free. Now look with me. I want you to follow along. Let's go to Exodus chapter 9. Exodus chapter 9, beginning in verse 13. And 9:13, Jehovah said to Moses, early in the morning, present yourself to Pharaoh and say to him, thus says Jehovah, the God of the Hebrews, Shalakitami, let my people go, or send my people forth to worship me. For this time I will send all my plagues upon your person and your courtiers and your people in order that you may know that there is none like me in all the world. I could have stretched forth my hand and stricken you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been effaced from the earth. Nevertheless, I've spared you for this purpose, in order to show you my power, and in order that my fame may resound throughout the world. Now, where it says my fame, in Hebrew it says my name. And you could say, well, name is associated with fame. You know, a person is known for their name and therefore, but the Hebrew does say name. What he's ultimately saying is that the very purpose that Pharaoh exists in this story is so that God's name will be recounted throughout the world and across all time. It's because of his name that he's going to do what he's going to do. Now let me tell you how David put it. Go with me to 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel chapter 7. 2 Samuel 7. David puts it this way. And let's look at verse 22. David says, "You are great indeed, O Lord God." He's talking to Jehovah. "There is none like you, and there is no other God but you, as we have always heard. And who is like your people Israel, a unique nation on earth, whom God went and redeemed as his people, winning renown for himself and doing great and marvelous deeds for them and for your land, driving out nations and their gods before your people, whom you redeemed for yourself from Egypt. You have established your people as your people Israel as your very own people, and you, O Lord, have become their God." All right, I've got to get another translation. I do this to myself all the time. In fact, let me open up the biblical text here on the Hebrew. In Samuel, 2 Samuel 7. And I wanted to do this because sometimes this translation is off far enough. Okay, listen to this. This is more accurate. Verse 23, David speaking. "And who is like your people Israel, the one nation on earth, whom God went to redeem to be his people, making himself a name?" Making himself a name. Now, I'm not even sure. Does this even get close to that? Winning renown for himself is what it says here. All right? So I get the connection the translator is trying to make. He does win renown for himself, but he makes himself a name. Now, in Hebrew, it says quite literally to put or to set for himself a name. What is doing that? The events of the Exodus literally put his name on these events, right? And by these events, Israel became your people, and you became L'Elohim. You became for them for God. So the event did two things. The Exodus, when God pulled the people out and his fame became known, what happens is his name is placed before the whole world, and Israel becomes the people of Jehovah. Jehovah becomes God to the people of Israel. And that, by the way, that phrase is used repeatedly in the Hebrew Bible to indicate sort of a covenant language. Now, since I'm through with the JPS for the day, thank you very much. It's beautifully bound and has great notes. But Christian and Jewish translations sometimes are just so far from a literal rendering. Enough said on that. Go with me to Isaiah. Isaiah 63 and beginning in verse 11. Isaiah 63, verse 11. "Then he remembered the days of old of Moses and his people. Where is he who brought them up out of the sea with the shepherd of his flock? Where is he who put in the midst of them the Holy Spirit, the Ruach Kadsho, his Holy Spirit, who caused his glorious arm to go at the right hand of Moses, who divided the waters before them to make for himself an everlasting name, who led them through the depths like a horse in the desert? They did not stumble. Like livestock that go down into the valley, the Spirit of Jehovah gave them rest. So you led your people to make for yourself a glorious name. Now, this text deals with the miracle of the Exodus, the departure and God's Holy Spirit going along with the people and the miraculous events. And notice in two texts, in Isaiah 63:12 and Isaiah 63:14, it says that he did all of this and made for himself a name. Olam and Teferet. Olam, a name Olam, is eternal name or unto an age. And then Teferet is glory or beauty. So a beautiful and eternal name God made for himself because of the Exodus. Now go with me to Jeremiah. Jeremiah 32. And I want to go to verse 20. Jeremiah 32:20. You have shown signs and wonders in the land of Egypt and to this day in Israel and among mankind. Interesting. In other words, it's not just Israel that, right? And you have made a name for yourself. Literally, you have made for yourself a name as it is this day. The events that you did then, you made a name for yourself. You brought your people Israel out of the land of Egypt with signs and wonders, with a strong hand and an outstretched arm, and with great terror. And you gave them this land, which you swore to their fathers to give them, a land flowing with milk and honey, and they entered and took possession of it. See, again, the Exodus and the miracle thereof and the settling of the land, all of that is captured into this miraculous event whereby Jehovah made a name for himself. Look at the prayer of Daniel in Daniel chapter 9. Daniel 9, and let's look at verse 9. Daniel 9, 9. To the Lord our God belong mercy and forgiveness, for we have rebelled against him. Daniel's prayer. Daniel is praying here. And have not obeyed the voice of Jehovah our God by walking in his laws, which he set before us by his servants, the prophets. And all Israel has transgressed. I'm reading a little bit too early. This is the lead up. And it's all good, but I want to save a little bit of time. Look down at verse 14. Therefore, Daniel 9:14. Therefore, Jehovah has kept ready the calamity and has brought it upon us. For Jehovah, our God, is righteous in all the work that he has done, and we have not obeyed his voice. And now, O Adonai, our God, who brought your people out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand and have made a name for yourself as it is this day, we have sinned. So all of the pre-work that I skipped over, his prayer, his confessions is we have failed, we've behaved poorly, we've rebelled against you and so forth. But then he says, but you brought us out of Egypt and you made a name for yourself. Look at Nehemiah. Another prayer, Nehemiah 9, and look at verse 9, Nehemiah 9, verse 9, and you saw the affliction of our fathers in Egypt and heard their cry at Yom Suf. Some translations say Red Sea, but that's not proper. It's supposed to be a sea of reeds. And performed signs and wonders against Pharaoh and all his servants and all the people of his land. For you knew that they acted arrogantly against our fathers. And you made a name for yourself as it is this day. You divided the sea before them so that they went through the midst of the sea on dry land, and you cast their pursuers into the depths as a stone by the mighty waters, etc. You see, all of these texts say that this is how Jehovah made himself a name. Prior to this, this name wasn't even known. But these events underscored the name. Who did this? Who is the God who brought Israel out of the land of Egypt? Oh, that's Jehovah. In fact, it was the event of the Exodus whereby he made a name for himself. In dozens of texts in the Hebrew Bible, the name Jehovah is affixed to a description of what he is known for. So in other words, you'll see texts over and over in the Hebrew Bible where it says, for instance, I am Jehovah who brought you out of the land of Egypt. You know, it's like a part of the name. It's connected. I'm the God. This is what I did. I'm Jehovah. I brought you out of Egypt. In fact, the canonical version of the Bible, Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy chapter 5, the 10 words, the covenant, written on stone. How does it begin? Anochi Yehovah Eloheka. I am Jehovah your God. How does it go? Who brought you out, right? From the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. So this is presumably written on the Ten Commandments. I am the God who brought you out from the land of Egypt, the house of slavery. So an accurate picture, an accurate biblical picture, is that the God of the fathers, known early in the text, in the patriarchal period, as El, the God known as El, whatever that means, revealed a previously unknown name to Moses in Moses' time, and then made himself known by that name to the Israelites, and not just the Israelites, to the Egyptians as well. And not just the Israelites and the Egyptians as well, but throughout history, from that point on, after Exodus 3, the story at the bush, Jehovah is the name of the deity. Now, I did a search this week. There's a phrase, Ki ani Yehovah, translated generally, that I am Jehovah. That I am Jehovah. Could be, sometimes it means because I am Jehovah. Typically in Leviticus and Numbers, it seems like that would be a better translation. But the Hebrew phrase, Ki ani Yehovah, that I am Jehovah, occurs 107 times in Scripture. We're not going to go through all of them this morning. Breathe deeply, relax. But I was curious. This is a statement where the deity is saying that I am Jehovah. And I wanted to look at how many times does it say that you may know that I am Jehovah? Because I've just established that the name Jehovah is known because of the Exodus. So I wanted to see if there's a connection between knowing God and knowing the events of the Exodus. So I put the phrase, I have good software, Accordance Bible software, and I said, let me find every phrase in the Bible that says know in any form of that verb, yada, know, and that I am Jehovah. I just want to look at that. Why do I want to look at that? Because I want to look at that. And when I did, and when I added the word know, the verb in any form, it dropped from 107 to 72. And we're not going to go through all 72, but I'm going to go through enough that you notice something. in the Pentateuch, knowing and Ki Ani Yehovah occurs seven times in the Pentateuch, that you might know, that they might know that I am Jehovah, seven times. Six times are in Exodus and one time is in Deuteronomy. We're going to go through those. Look, I started to grab that JPS. Let's go Exodus chapter 6. I think I'm going to put it in a box. Exodus chapter 6 and verse 2. Now, this is a passage we've worked in very closely for a couple of weeks now, but watch this. And God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am Jehovah. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob by the name God or El Shaddai, but by my name Jehovah, Jehovah was not known to them. And I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their sojournings in which they sojourned. And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, kept in bondage by Egypt or Mitzrayim. And I have remembered my covenant. Therefore, say to the children of Israel, Ani Yehovah, I am Jehovah, and I will bring you out from under the burden of Egypt, and I will deliver you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments, and I will take you from me to me for a people, and I will be to you for a God. And you shall know that I am Jehovah your God, who brings you out from under the burdens of Egypt. And I will bring you the land which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, and I will give it to you for a heritage. I am Jehovah. Notice in this particular passage, it says, and you shall know that I am Jehovah, and you shall know that I am Jehovah. He's speaking to the children of Israel there. So the children of Israel will know that that the God of their fathers is now Jehovah. And how will they know that? Because of the Exodus. Because God made a name for himself with this. So they're going to know that. Now, look at Exodus chapter 7 and verse 15. Exodus 7. verse 15. Get you to Pharaoh in the morning. Lo, he goes out to the water, and you shall stand by the river's brink to meet him. And the rod which was turned to a snake shall you take in your hand, and you shall say to him, Jehovah, God of the Hebrews, has sent me to you, saying, let my people go that they may serve me in the wilderness. And behold, till now you would not hear. Thus says Jehovah, in this you shall know, Ki Ani Yehovah. What's going to cause him to know that Jehovah is the God? Watch. Behold, I will smite with the rod that is in my hand upon the water in the river, and it shall be turned to blood, and the fish that's in the river shall die, the river shall stink, and so forth and so on. So the point is, Pharaoh, by the events around him in the world in which he lives and governs and reigns and is thought to be in control of things, is going to fall down around him through these miraculous events of the Exodus at the hand of Moses and Aaron as proclaimed from Jehovah. So the idea is that God's going to act against Egypt, and Pharaoh will know, there's our verb know, make known, we're making known God in these events, Ki Ani Yehovah. Look at chapter 8 of Exodus. Exodus 8. And by the way, there are I'm only focused in the Pentateuch, because all throughout the Bible, this idea of knowing Ki Ani Yehovah is tied not only in this event, but prophetic events as well. But I'm focused on the Pentateuch right now, and the Exodus from Egypt. So look at Exodus 8, verse 16. It says, and Jehovah said to Moses, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh. Lo, he comes forth to the water, and say to him, you know, Moses interrupts Pharaoh's bathing. We assume he's bathing, or going to the restroom. But either way, Moses always interrupts him, and say to him, "Thus says Jehovah, let my people go that they may serve me. Else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of gnats upon you and upon your servants and upon your people, and into your houses, and the houses of Mitzrayim or Egypt shall be full of swarms of gnats, and also the ground on which they are. And I will separate in that day the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of gnats shall be there, to the end that you may know that I am Jehovah in the midst of the earth." Or that I, Jehovah, am in the midst of the land. Like I'm here, present. He tells him, no, you're going to know. Pharaoh, you are going to know. You personally will know. Yada. Ki ani Yehovah in the midst of the earth. Chapter 10 of Exodus. Chapter 10. And let's start. Let's just read verse 1 and 2. Exodus 10, 1 and 2. "And Jehovah said to Moses, go into Pharaoh, for I've hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show these my signs before him, and you may tell in the ears of your son and of your son's son what things I've done in Egypt and my signs which I've done among them, that you may know ki ani Yehovah, that you may know that I am Jehovah." See? And it goes on, and it talks about Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh. Again, when your children ask about the events of the Exodus, you're going to tell them. You know, God made himself known at that time. And look at chapter 16, Exodus 16. Exodus 16 and verse 11. And it says, "And the Lord and Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, I've heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at evening you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am Jehovah your God." Another miracle takes place, the miraculous feeding of the quail. Remember the story. And at this time, that miracle too is going to let the children of Israel know that Jehovah is the one acting in history. Now, look at Exodus 29. Exodus 29. And verse 45. Exodus 29, 45. And by the way, this starts off, it's talking about, let's see, it's talking about the tent of meeting. And it says in verse 45, "And I will dwell among the children of Israel and will be their God, and they shall know that I am Jehovah their God that brought them out of the land of Egypt and that I dwell among them." Again, another connection, the knowing and the associating of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the name that wasn't known prior to the time of Moses, is now known as the God who brought the children of Israel up out of the land of Egypt. And there's one more in the book of Exodus I want to look at, but I won't go deeply into it. But look at Exodus 31, 13. Many of you know this verse. It's about the Sabbaths. Look at verse 12. "And Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, verily my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it's a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am Jehovah who sanctifies you. And you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it's holy to you," and so forth. Interesting that the Sabbath and the sign of the Sabbath is also associated with God being known through the Exodus period and so forth. Leviticus and Numbers have also the phrase, ki ani Yehovah, but not associated with the knowing of God through the Exodus. I wanted that to be pretty clear. Deuteronomy is the only other one that contains the knowing of Jehovah through the Exodus. Look at Deuteronomy 29, just so you have this in your text, in your notes. Deuteronomy 29 and verse 4. And I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes are not worn old upon you. Your shoe is not worn out upon your feet or your foot. You've not eaten bread, neither have you drunk wine or strong drink, that you might know that I am Jehovah your God. Again, it's the miracles of the desert experience in the Exodus that underscores, you're going to know that I'm Jehovah because of these things. Now, prior to Moses and his time, God was indeed known, but not by the name Jehovah. This name was revealed to Moses in the context of the Exodus, and through the Exodus, El Shaddai, El Olam, El Barit, El Elohei, Yisrael, El Eloah, Elohim, El, the ancient El, becomes known as Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So much so that whenever people talk about this God, who is this God? Who is this Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh? Who is Jehovah? Jehovah, Hu Ha-Elohim. He is the Elohim. He is the God who saved Israel out of the land of Egypt. He says himself in writing, Anochi Jehovah Elohecha. I am Jehovah, your Elohim. He becomes known not only in the context of the Exodus, through the Exodus, El becomes known as Jehovah, not only to Moses, but to the Israelites and to the Egyptians and to the entire world. Right? To this day. All the biblical writers seem to know that the Exodus was used to make a name for Jehovah. A greater part of the life and times of Moses centers around the Exodus. So think about this. It's covering the five books. The Pentateuch covers the 40 years. Or 40 years are spent, let me put it this way, between Exodus 3 and chapter 4, that right around there, through Deuteronomy, the end of Deuteronomy, all of that covers 40 years. I mean, think about that. From the time that Moses goes to say, let my people go, that's most of the Pentateuch. Now, what we've been focusing on the last quite a few months, actually, is can we determine what within the Pentateuch fits within that time frame? You know, the time of Moses, roughly. Exodus chapter 3 through Deuteronomy chapter 34. Our Pentateuch remains, or we should say it. How much of, let me ask it as a question, how much of our Pentateuch remains unexplored with a careful eye? Have we truly looked at, from Genesis 1 through Deuteronomy 34:12, have we looked at it really closely? How much of it requires a new look? I mean, I'm reminded of Psalm 119:18. My teacher Yokanani, Johnny Powell, used to always say, Gal enai va'avita niflaut mitoratecha. Open my eyes and I will look for wonderful things from your Torah. I say that we begin at the beginning and do just that in a new series beginning in concert with the Jewish calendar. Now, many of you, all of you who are listening to me now, with the exception of a couple that I mailed this week, should have one of these calendars. If you don't, it's not my fault. You email me and I will send you one. And it doesn't cost you anything. But this calendar has every Torah reading written like you look at the date and you say, oh, it's September, it's October the 2nd. That's Bereshit. That's Genesis 1:1 through. It gives you the Torah reading and the prophet reading. So you could get one of these in time for October 2nd if you don't have one. You email me. Other people have kindly donated to cover the cost of this, and people can still do that. But you don't have to. We'll send it to you. But what if we started October the 2nd and we did the Torah readings every week? Now, this is a little bit different, I think, than anyone else is doing, maybe in the world. A lot of people follow the weekly Torah portions, but with the careful look that we've gone through over the past year or so, we're going to now apply that. We're going to look at, we're going to consider academically, what have some of the academic approaches to these texts been? What can we discern from the text? Being honest, really being honest to Moses. So I propose, now next week, I want to kick off with an introduction, so to speak. Sort of a, kind of a, here's what we're going to do in a new series called A New Look at the Pentateuch. And then the first in the series, I have a very big surprise for you. The first one, Bereshit, straight out of the gate, we have a special guest. Dr. James Tabor knows a little bit about Genesis. He's even got his own translation of Genesis, and you could get that too, in fact, by the time of October 2nd. But Dr. Tabor has agreed to kick us off on October the 2nd. He'll be teaching Torah portion Bereshit. So you can log on wherever you're at and hear that class. This next Saturday, I'm going to introduce the subject of our new series. But you don't want to miss a single one of these classes, because in a period of a year, we will go through the entire Pentateuch carefully, going through from Genesis 1 through Deuteronomy 34, Verse 12, open my eyes, and we'll look for wonderful things in your Torah. Join us next Saturday. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov. Have a beautiful week.